All right. Well, it's Mother's Day, and we're going to change some things up a little bit. I want to recognize mothers at the end of the service is what I'd like to do and do some things there. If you have your Bibles with you and you'd like to open and follow along, open your Bibles to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. So I was going to start a new series today, but I realized it was Mother's Day, so I decided I'll put it off and do what I don't often do and do a Mother's Day type of a message. And so what do you do for Mother's Day message? Do you preach at moms and make them feel guilty? That's not the best thing to do. So I decided not to go that direction. I thought that the best thing I could do is to share a message about what frustrates moms the most. Okay? What frustrates moms the most? And you say, how in the world do you narrow that down? So I had a couple ideas as to how to narrow that down. I thought if we could just get the men to like speak up and share their thoughts of what it is to irritate a woman or stuff like that. But I thought that in doing that, I would be setting the men up for their wives to be like, really? Really? You totally missed that, you know, or are you serious? You said that. And so the secondary thought is men would be seeing that ahead of time, and so they would not say anything, so it'd be really quiet. Because the other side is women don't get irritated much, right? See, it's so quiet. We're not sure how to respond. See, that's why we go the direction we go. And so I'll be the one. I'm not afraid. I go crazy sometimes, and I'm okay with it. So I've narrowed it down based on all my experience. Been married over 20 years, been a pastor for a long time, done a lot of counseling, been around a lot of people. I did grow up, however, with, it was 8 brothers and 1 sister, so I just didn't have a clue on that one. But anyway, I think afterwards I've figured some things out. So here's, ladies, you ready? The number one top frustration for women. You have it in your mind? You're like, I hope he says this. Really hope it's this one. Here we go. When you feel like you're not listened to. How's that? Was that good? Agree, disagree? Now don't put your hands up. I'm gonna say y'all agree. It's unanimous, right? Because no one, okay, good. We're good. You see, here's the reality. When kids don't listen to your instruction, it is really frustrating. And you'll share that with your spouse or your friends, or you'll put it on Facebook, and it's, oh, my kids, they never listen. If I say go right, they go left. If I say put pants on, they put shorts on. If I say your skirt is too short, they put a, you know, and it's just crazy the things that they do. And it's challenging because nobody wants to listen. And you have to be careful because we extend that into your friends or your husband. That, to me, seems to sum up a lot of marital problems, actually. He doesn't understand me. He just doesn't listen to me. Oh. So here's the thing. We're in church, and I don't want to just address this to moms. What I understand is that this frustrates God, too. You realize that? I think one of the top frustrations that God has is that we just don't listen. So I thought that in a correlating kind of way, we would talk about this morning and get some advice from somebody that I think has some really great words of wisdom for us, and this is James. So James is the half-brother of Jesus. Okay, so James has a lot of great things to say. James grew up with Jesus. So James got to hang out with him when he was a young child. James got to watch Jesus do all kinds of different things. James was there all the way through Jesus' adulthood as well. And listen, here's the fascinating thing about James. James did not believe that Jesus was God until Jesus rose from the dead. And it was at that point, and this is significant, because listen, what would it take? What would it take for me? You know where I'm going, right? What would it take for me to convince my brother that I was God? What would it take, right? And here's James, who he's with his brother watching him grow up. He sees him die, and then he sees that he's risen again. He says, wow, this guy truly is God. To the degree that James then is a follower of Christ after his resurrection, and James then continues to be the leader in the church of Jerusalem then for years after that. And so that's his track record. And so James has some significant things to say. So all I'm saying is I'm saying, hey, listen, don't listen just to me. Listen to James because he has it. And if you're not going to listen to James, then listen to me because James says it really well, okay? So James chapter 1. And he says this in verse 22. He talks about faith, and then he gets all the way through, and he gets to verse 22. He says, but be doers of the word. Be doers of the word. Not hearers only, deceiving yourself. At the end of this little portion, the end of the paragraph, as I have it in my Bible, verse 25, he says, the doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. You will be blessed. This will be a blessing to you. If you apply this one thing, you'll be blessed. You can be a blessing to moms today by doing this. You can be a blessing to each other by doing this. And you can be a blessing to God, and he wants to be a blessing to you as you do this. So he says, be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourself. Doers and not hearers only. He's saying, don't be deceived into thinking that listening is just about hearing something. Listening involves hearing and doing something. Would you agree? That makes sense, right? Like don't just hear me. I'm expecting some action to go alongside of that. Listening involves that. It involves hearing and then doing. Here's what a hearer does. A hearer shows up to listen, right? In church setting, a hearer shows up to come to church. A hearer shows up to go to Bible study. A hearer shows up and they feel that that's good enough. It's interesting. They can even repeat the same words back. You ever do that in a conversation with your best friend or with somebody where they say something and they say, you're not listening to me, and then you repeat word for word back to them? Did that help when you did that? No, not generally, because what are they really saying? It's not about whether you can memorize what I've just said. It's about whether you can apply it, whether it has any impactful meaning to you in what you're hearing me say, and whether you're going to do anything about it. Here James says, don't deceive yourself. Don't lie to yourself and be a hearer only that just listens and you give yourself credit for listening. A hearer is interesting. Here's what we do in church setting. You ready? This might summarize a lot of you, I don't know, or some of you, or maybe a couple of you, I'm not sure. But I know there's something interesting in church world, and I've seen it for a long time. We go to church to hear, and we measure the success of the pastor based on how guilty we feel. Okay? This is fascinating, because if I feel guilty at a level of 1 to 10, if I feel guilty at a 3, the pastor did okay. If I feel guilty to a level of a 7, then man, that was pretty good. Pastor did a great job. If I'm like so guilty that I even shed a tear, or something is like, wow, my emotions are so angry, then I walk out and I'm like, man, that was a great message. Today's church was so awesome. I felt so guilty. This was just, wow, I felt like God was moving in me. And here's what we do. We go in, we feel guilty, we feel that, and then we go and we're like, okay, this is great. And we walk out and we go home and we're like, wow, that was such a great service. We go through the week and we forget about what we were guilty about, right? And we come back the next Sunday. What do we do the next Sunday? The same thing all over again. Oh man, I'm going to feel guilty again. This is going to be so great. And wow, I feel so... Whew. And by feeling guilty, I feel like I've done my spiritual thing. Have you gotten caught up in this? Man, we all have, haven't we? And I've heard years ago, I was analyzing this. Jamie and I were analyzing this as we were talking this through. Like, man, this is weird. This is weird. And here's what we like to say about that. If I feel so guilty at a level of a 9 or a 10, then that was some deep preaching there. Right? Is it deep preaching? Here's what I found. As I went to college, and I went to Bible college and seminary and all this stuff, man, I had some professors that were lousy orators. They were lousy teachers. They were boring. I mean, listen, I can fall asleep in pretty much anything, and they were like really, in 2 minutes flat, I could be gone. But here's what I realized. It was up to me, as the listener, to engage my brain with where they were. It wasn't so much of the... Now, that doesn't take the responsibility off of me, but here's what I'm saying. In this kind of setting, to be a hearer only is to come in and to say, okay, it's been good enough that I feel bad. It's been good enough that I feel guilty. And if I feel really, really guilty, the preacher's done his job, I've done my job, I'm religious, I'm with God, and we can walk out and be okay. Now, there's a problem with that. Because the church is known for its guilt trips. And depending on which religious background you come from, you would have a different perspective on the guilt trip. Some churches, they're really well known for guilting people into things. And I think Baptists do a pretty good job over the years to give people guilt trips and stuff. But that really isn't the end. He says, be a doer. Be a doer, not a hearer only. And so then he gives the illustration. Verse 24. He says, for he looks at himself and goes, or for 23, I'm sorry. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in the mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away, and at once he forgets what he was like. But the one who looks in the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being a no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. So here's the reality. Let me give you a picture of this. A hearer takes and looks in the mirror, says, look at that, and then walks away. It's good enough. I looked in and I'm good to go, right? And so, listen, you got up this morning, and it looks like all of you, except for a couple, looked in the mirror and did something with it, right? And you looked, and here's what you did. You looked, and you're like, wow, that bedhead, and I got this thing going out like this, and I need some spray or water or something. I got to get rid of that, and look at that makeup. It's all smeared or whatever. And guys, we don't have this problem. I spent 3 seconds looking at my hair, and yep, it's good, right? And so some of you have that, and you're like, here's a gift. I don't even have a mirror in my office bathroom anymore. It's so great. I don't need it. I'm good, right? Because I'm not going to change anything. I can't. Here's the reality. When you look in the mirror, the expectation is you don't look to say, oh, yeah. You look to say, oh, my. Do you know, I figured out how long the average person stands in front of the mirror. Guess how long? As long as it takes to fix what they see is messed up. Right? I'm sorry, it's not a minute thing. Because here's the reality. We all stand there for the amount of time that we feel we need to stand there until something changes. And we say, oh man, this is really a bad day. I need to change this. I need to do this different. And so we stop. We look, and we look intently, it says, and that's to look with all kinds of, look, I'm looking at every detail. It's here, let me illustrate that. If I'm looking in the mirror, I'll be a girl because the guys don't do this as well. Some do, but mostly don't. There's a difference between, ladies, with me, looking at the mirror when you're going to work versus looking at the mirror or going to school, either one, or looking at the mirror when you're going to the prom or your wedding. You got me? Like, good night, ladies. I have these three beautiful daughters, and I was blown away. I took my daughter out last night, and she needed makeup, you know? And I'm like, okay, how much could makeup be? Oh, my. Yeah, oh, my. She's like, I just need a couple little things. This little tube like this, like $10, right? And I'm like, oh, my, you know? And she said, here's what she said, literally. She said this. She said, Dad, you should have known this when you had daughters. I'm like, how should I have known this? I grew up in a family of guys. We didn't do makeup. We didn't do hair. My mom cut our hair for us. Why? Save money. We didn't do makeup ever, you know? And so we go in, and we're looking at this, that, and the other. Here's what I know. On prom night, seeing my daughters get ready for prom, they get somebody to do their hair. They spend all kinds of time in front of a mirror. Some ladies, they'll spend hours. I don't know how you do it. I just don't. Wow, hours looking at the mirror, and here's what you do. You look so intently at the mirror. You're like, oh, I got this one little hair. That's it. I got to fix that one thing. And then you say, how's my hair look? Well, 3 hours ago, it looked the same to me as it does now. I'm just saying, but I'm not saying that. Bad answer. That's a bad day. You'll lose your date. Promise. Okay. So here's what you say. Wow. You are beautiful. See, you stand in front of the mirror for as long as it takes till you see something that needs to be changed, and you change it, and that's how this really works. It's that you are hearing, you're looking at intently, and you're saying, this needs to change. Listen, if you got up in the morning, and you looked in the mirror, and you said, oh, wow, it's a bad day. Oh, well. And you got in your car, and you went to work, and your boss looks at you like, wow, what just happened? Why are you, whoa, look, did you look in the mirror today? And you said, yes, I looked in the mirror. Guess what? Your boss does not give you credit for looking in the mirror, right? Or if you go on the prom date, you go to your wedding day, and you're like, ah, right? You will not get credit for looking in the mirror. But oftentimes in a church setting, here's what we do. I give you credit, or you give yourself credit, or we give each other credit for looking in the mirror and doing nothing. Isn't there something wrong with that? We're supposed to be not hearers only. Don't be deceived in thinking, I feel guilty. Oh, man, this really touched my heart, so therefore it's good enough. No. Don't stop there. That's just the beginning. He says, look intently and do something about it. Let God work in you to the degree that your actions are going to be different than where you were before. So that's what James is saying here. What if you have a bad hair day? Does it count for that? Even if you have a bad hair day, the reality is you still looked in the mirror to try to make your hair the best that it possibly could be, right? So you have a bad hair day, it's still, you've made improvements. Sometimes you feel like you've made improvements and you're still not satisfied. Been there, done that. But the fact is, you're a work in progress and you're making the changes you need to as you go along. So I want to dive into an illustration of one woman that really did a great job with the mirror in 1 Samuel 25. In 1 Samuel 25, you can follow along there with me. I'm going to kind of jump around in this text here. It's in the Old Testament. And just a great story of how this one woman just really made a huge change in a couple people's lives. So it's 1 Samuel chapter 25. Now, to do this right, I'm going to get some volunteers for this. So we're going to have three characters. So instead of you just sitting and hearing the story, I want to kind of see it played out a little bit so you can feel it a little better, okay? So there's three characters. 1 Samuel 25, verse 1. Here's the context of when this is going on. It says, now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him. Samuel was kind of the leader spiritually of Israel at that point in time. And so they were just sad that he was gone. They buried him in the house of Ramah. Then David rose, and David was anointed to be king, but not king yet. David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran, and it was there that he was really guarding that area. He was in the military and is guarding that area. And he says there was a man of Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. So here's our three characters. We have Nabal, we have Abigail, and we have David. So I picked Abigail ahead of time, and I let her know this because what she's described as is next is beautiful and discerning. And it wouldn't be good for me to pick any woman here and say, she can be described as beautiful and discerning. That would look kind of odd for the pastor to do that. So I'm going to pick my daughter. So Angela, why don't you come up? And you're going to play as Abigail. Now, I need two guys for this, okay? I need Nabal, and I need David. Okay? So, Alex, you want to help me out? I appreciate it. Jared, do you want to help me out? Okay, cool. Great. Awesome. Good job, guys. Okay? So, I'm not sure who to pick. Who should be Nabal and who should be David? One of you is going to be the villain and the other one's going to be the hero. But you're both kind of all right people. So, you're taller, so I'll let you be Nabal. Okay? And you're David because David was a shorter guy. Okay? So here's what it says. It says about Abigail. You guys are going to hang out for a little bit, and I'll reward you. I'll give you a soda in the youth group. How's that? Good? All right. So anyway, so here's the reality. Abigail, it says in the next verse that she was beautiful, and she was discerning. She had a discerning heart. So to illustrate and to help Abigail out, she's going to carry this mirror, okay? Because she has the mirror. In order to be beautiful, you have to what? Look in the mirror and make some changes, right? And do the adjustments that need to happen, okay? So that's Abigail. Now, David was in charge of defending that area. He was kind of hanging out with his soldiers there, and he was defending that area, and so he was in the military. And so it's not a real Nerf gun. It's kind of a cheap one, but it still shoots kind of okay. So you can use it at your pleasure, but not yet. Okay, So that was David. He had mighty men with him that were there defending that area. Now, the guy that was over here, this is Nabal, and Nabal was the sheep shearer. He was like this super rich guy in that area. He's got all kinds of stuff. And so for teen language, to be super rich is to have lots of snacks, okay? And so you can have your Nabal with lots of snacks, okay? Now, I don't know. I'm just trying to illustrate so you can get a picture of what's going on here, okay? Because I want you to be able to grab onto this and understand it and apply it to your lives is my goal. I want you not to be a hearer and feel guilty only. I actually want you to be a doer after this. And so in order to do that, I'm trying to help you see a picture of 1 Samuel 25. So let me walk this through. You guys can hear. You come over here. A little further. That's good. Perfect. Okay, and you can kind of, you're just marching in the area, so you can kind of act this out a little bit. You can just walk back and forth, because I know you love to be in front of people. I can kind of see that. And so this is good. So Alex, just kind of meander like you're defending the area. Okay, good. And you just kind of hang out, and you can count your food, because that's kind of what a sheep shearer is doing. He's just kind of looking at it, because he's really rich, and he's got lots of food, and I'm going to count my food. Okay, and so here's what he does. David and his men, they leave the funeral for Samuel, and they're in the wilderness, but the problem is they need some food. So what he does then, the next few verses, is he sends 10 of his men to Nabal, because he was the rich guy in town, and they're defending his territory as well. And so the expectation is, it's kind of like a tax idea, but not quite a tax. It's just a good gesture. It's kindness. It's saying, hey, look, I've been taking care of you. I really could use some food. We messed up on our thing, so can you just help us out? And it's not like he couldn't spare it because he's got plenty, okay? And so it's as if the guys come over and they said, hey, listen, can we just have one of those bags to share a bag of Doritos? So the expectation, because he has a box of them, because he's got a bunch of these, the expectation is what? He's going to share. Don't you love it when people share? Yeah, and that's the expectation. And so he says to greet him in this way, peace be to you, peace be to your house, to all that you have. Look, we're taking care of you. You know that we're around and stuff like that. And we want peace for you. This is not a manipulation. We're just asking for your kindness here. He says, ask the young men, and they will tell you, therefore, let the young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come on a feast day. Please give us whatever you have at your hand to your servants, and to your son, David. So they come in, they say this to Nabal. Verse 10, then, is interesting. Nabal answered David's servants. Like, what's the expectation, right? He's a rich guy. Just give me $20. He's got all this food. Just give me one bag of chips. It's all there. It's not a big deal. Here's Nabal's response. And by the way, let me describe Nabal. He's not only very rich, but his name, don't take this personally because it's not again about you, but his name literally means worthless. Could you imagine? It's not against you. It's just random. We love you, Jared. Okay. But Nabal's name literally means worthless. But here's what, so his parents named him worthless. Think about this, right? So here he spends, if you psychologically do a little bit of mind work into this, he spends all his life to gather wealth, to prove that he's worth something. But he's not willing to share it because he's proving that he's worth something to everybody else. And he guards it. And later on, you'll find out that he was just a mean-spirited, angry guy, a tough guy to be around. Listen, Nabal and Abigail are married, right? So Abigail is this beautiful woman, very discerning. How she ended up with poor, useless Nabal? I'm sorry. But how she ended up there? I don't know, but that's what happens. I see that a lot of times where this wonderful woman ends up with a guy that's not. And you know, kind of there. And so you have this struggle that's going on. So David comes up and he says, hey, listen, his men do. Well, listen, we need some food. Would you just spare us some? And he says, who is David? Everybody knows who David is. He knows who David is. He says, who's David? Like, who cares? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat? See what he's saying? It's mine, right? All that I've killed for my shearers and give it to the men who come from I don't know where. So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all this. Now, if you're David, how do you feel? Listen, it wasn't just chips they were needing. They were in need of real food because they needed to survive. And the guy that they're guarding said, no way, I'm not feeding you. So you follow this down through. They go back and verse 13, David says it very clearly. David was angry. He says, every man strap on his sword. And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword. About 400 men. That's a little bit of firepower, wouldn't you say? So they come up after David while 200 remained with the baggage. So he leaves 200 back. He takes 400 with him. It's like, I'm going to teach Nabal a lesson. We've been guarding him all this time, and I'm going to teach him a lesson. So he sets out to go against him. Here, can I just go back and apply this? Listen, this is really good. If you're kind of messed up in the illustration, just listen real quick. Here's what David's doing. This is so important. Don't miss this. He's going to make sure that Nabal listens. Isn't that good? You ever set out to make sure somebody listens? Listen, I don't think you're hearing me. And here's what we do. We get louder, don't we? We convince them through multiple arguments. We will withhold things from them. We will be unkind to them. We'll do all kinds of things in order to make them listen to us. That's what David's doing. Have you done that in a relationship? Where you're like, you know what? You're not listening to me. I'm going to speak louder than you. And they try to give a response and you speak straight over top of them and you get even louder than them. And then you begin to embarrass them. And then you put something on Facebook or whatever and you're like, man, I'm going to let you have it. And you just keep on going because you feel like they have not listened to you. David says, I feel like he's not listening to me. He doesn't understand who I am. He doesn't understand what I'm doing. I've just asked for something nice and he's not doing it. So I'm going to go make sure he listens to me. Wow, do we do that in our relationships? So he goes, and he begins his journey in to where he's at. One of the young men, verse 14, and this was fascinating, verse 14, one of the young men told Abigail, so goes over to Abigail, Nabal's wife. Do you remember all about her? She's wise, she's discerning, she's beautiful. She's back at the house. So they run to him and says, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. He treated them poorly. He should have never done that. He's speaking about David, and everybody knows who David is. They know he's an honorable guy. They know all the nice things about him, and they're like, we should be taking care of him. But our master, he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us. Here's what they did. We suffered no harm. We did not miss anything when we were in the fields as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us, both by night and by day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, know this and consider that you should do for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him. So here's what the servant does. You ready? Let me have this. The servant goes and says, here, I want to show you what's going on in this situation. Abigail, I want you to look at this situation. I want you to look in the mirror. I want you to look at this. This is very important for you to look at. So Abigail, and he says to her, you need to make a choice. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with this information? There's got to be something going, because he's coming and he's going to wipe us out. Would she fear for her life at that point? Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. Because that would be an unusual thing to go that far into this. But certainly Nabal, would there be a problem there? Now, so she hears and then she has to make a decision. What's she going to do? Now, let's do multiple choice endings. You ever do this? You ever have multiple choice endings? Okay. You're married to a guy. You're married to a guy. That's a worthless guy. Right? He's challenging to be around. No reflection of you. I'm just having fun. He's not the husband of your dreams. It even says he's badly behaved. Here's an adult that's got behavior issues, that people don't want to be around him. Now let's do multiple choice. If you're Abigail, what do you do? Here's one kind of thought. If you've been in a bad relationship, if you've been in a really tough spot where your spouse is just badly behaved, and you know somebody's going to come and do some harm to him, option one is, cool. He's going to get what he's got coming. I'm going to set up the cameras because I'm going to enjoy this. Right? Isn't that a viable, honest response that you'd have if you're in a bad relationship? Where you're like, man, okay, this is going to be great. We'll see what happens to this guy. I know he's rich and I'm going to inherit and it's going to be fine, but whatever. And you kind of take that position where it's, I'm going to just step back and be passive and do nothing, but I'm just going to watch what's bad happening. You have a second response then. Here's the second response, is that you step in and do something. Listen, if you step in and do something to save your husband, how hard would that be to save your husband when he's a jerk? It speaks into what she does, speaks into who she really is. So Abigail made haste, verse 18. Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and the 5 sheep already prepared and the 5 says in part, and he goes and it just prepared, gets all kinds of things. So here's what Abigail does. Doesn't take it from him, but Abigail goes and gets all the things that are prepared and does what she needs to, prepares over and above what they need for the men. Because all they're asking was for some food. So Abigail goes, you know what, take out everything out of the cupboards, we're going to have a big old feast, clear out the freezer, whatever we have to do, we're going to go, we're going to take care of these guys, and I'm going to do what I can to get in the way. So she goes and she says in verse 19, says to the young men, go on before me, I'll come after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. Very wise. She doesn't go to her husband and say, this is what I'm going to do because you did this, I'm going to do this. She literally goes, and this is a fascinating little story of things that are going on here, but says, I'm just going to go ahead and take care of this. So she's riding down the donkey and came under cover of the mountain. Behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now, David had said, here's what he was saying. Here's the speak that was going on in his mind prior to, surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belonged to him." His plan was to kill everything. Now, I'm going to get to this in a second. David was wrong. So Abigail, verse 23. Abigail saw David. She hurried. She got down from the donkey. She fell down before David on her face and bowed to the ground. This is a position of humility. Ladies, is this challenging? She listened to the servant. She heard what he said, and she looked and said, there's got to be something to do something. As a matter of fact, that's going to be me that needs to do something. So I'm going to do what I have to do to take care of my husband in this moment, even though he's being a total jerk. She bows down to him, even though David's in the wrong. She said, this is so incredible. I mean, this is going to tweak every nerve in you ladies. And it tweaks a nerve in me. What she says is incredible. She says, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt." What? What did she do that was wrong? She's pleading for mercy and she's saying, "Listen, I will be the substitute for my husband." Much like Jesus has been the substitute for us in what he's paid for our sin. Here's Abigail who comes and says, "I will be the substitute for my husband," bows down and says, "On me place the guilt." She says, "Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this." I love this. She's being honest about her husband. She says, "Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal." She'd get one in, right? "For as his name is, so he is. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives." Now here's what she does. This is really fascinating. Ready? Miss Abigail, turn that mirror around. Go up to David. You ready? That one. The one that's guarding you, right? He's keeping you safe. Now, you're going to hold that up so that he can see himself, because that's what she does so carefully, so gently. She says, "Place the guilt on me," right? And here's what she says. She says, "Now," in verse 26, "Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt." The Lord stopped you. The Lord slowed you down from doing what is totally wrong in his eyes. To react in this way would be, you'd be guilty before God. She holds the mirror up to him and says, "Look what you are doing." Whew. It says, "And from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord." She turns around and she says, "Let's focus on God. David, listen, can I just put the mirror up? Here's what you're doing. You're reacting out of selfishness. You're reacting because your feelings got hurt. You're reacting because you're just in a bad place and you're just kind of going after him. And I get it, David. But listen, what you're about to do is going against God. And I just want to gently put this mirror up. I want to gently give you an opportunity to look intently at this mirror, not at me. Look at the mirror and see what you're doing so that you can change the course of your actions. Now he has a choice right there. Listen, let's go back. We won't do women's rights for today, but women's rights for back then, women were property. Okay? She had no standing before David in that day. And here's what David could do. He could make her his servant, slave, or he could kill her. because he's already got anger in his heart. Fascinating. Here's what David does. Verse 32, David said to Abigail, so he's got the gun in his hand, and he turns and says to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand." Whew. Here's this mighty man that's got all of 400 people, 400 guys looking at him. How embarrassing would this be to have this poor woman come over and to call him out and put the mirror up and say, "Look, David, what you're doing." How challenging would this be to his ego, to everything about him, to say, "I'm wrong, I need to go a different direction." Men, pay attention to this, right? This is a great man that can say, "I'm going the wrong direction. I'm reacting to something I should not be reacting to." That's a man of God. Somebody that had every right to be upset, every right to be angry, every right to kind of push, but realizing this is not God's war. This is not God's battle. God will take care of this. So she so wisely, so gently holds the mirror up to David, and David has the opportunity to be able to say, "Wow, I'm focusing on God. Lord, thank you for saving me from this. Thank you for Abigail, his wife, for coming and saving me from this." So he turns around. He received from her hand what she had brought to him. They have a great feast, and they go away. Nabal knows nothing about this. So that night, she goes and she finds Nabal, and this is in the next portion, verse 36. She goes to find Nabal, and Nabal is in a party. He's throwing a party with his friends. He's drunk, and he's not worth talking to at that point in time, so she doesn't go talk to him. Next day, after he gets up, he's got his mind about him. And in verse 37, in the morning when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him. Now, there's a lot of confusion as to what that literally means. Did he have a heart attack? Did he have, a stroke? He didn't die. Or did he just have a hardened heart? Let's think about this. My preference would be, my thought is that he had a hardened heart. Because what just happened is he found out that his wife went and took and said, "Here, you can have it all." Not that all of his wealth was gone, but gave away way more than David was even asking for to appease him. And he was so consumed with making his worth, his value about his stuff, when something was gone, his heart just, angry, hard heart, just fuming. And that's where we find him. To go a little further, and we see the next part, and this is fascinating. So she tells him this, and I would imagine she's a little bit scared. It says his heart died within him, and he became as stone. He was just a hardened person. And then it says, about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. So here's what Abigail did. She very gently showed David what he had done, or what he was about to do. She turned and went to Nabal, and very gently showed Nabal what he had done. Just turn the mirror very gently in on Nabal then to be able to say, "Hey, here's what you've done." The distinction was David said, "Oh, blessed be the Lord. Thank you for showing me this." Nabal's heart was hardened and angry. 10 days later, he died. Okay, thanks, guys. You done? You guys did great. Give them a hand. So, let me just apply this and conclude. Abigail did not give herself credit for feeling bad about her husband. Got it? That servant gave her a message that she would be on a scale 1 to 10 about feeling guilty. "Oh, man, I feel so bad for him." Unless if she's really bitter about him, then she'd be like, "I'm so excited for this." It's one or the other. But she didn't do that. She didn't credit herself with a feeling one way or the other. She didn't give herself an out because of the bad marriage either. See that? God calls each one of us to love no matter what. He says, love God with all your heart and mind and soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. He even says, if you're like, yeah, but you don't understand, my husband's not so neighborly, my wife's not so neighborly, my kids are not, or whatever, he says, love your enemy as yourself. Like, that gets everybody, doesn't it? Your friends, and your enemies. Yep. Okay, so everybody, you are called to love everyone, and that's what Abigail simply does. Regardless of what was done to her, she was still being loving to him. So she hears, and she didn't stop there. She didn't just feel bad. She did something to spare her husband's life, and she did something to stop David from making a bad decision. So here's my point. Everyone here has the potential to be an Abigail. Isn't that cool? Everyone sitting here has the potential to be like Abigail. Abigail was very simple. She looked in the mirror. She heard what was going on. She heard about the problem, and she just did something about it. She didn't look in the mirror and say, oh, well, and walk away. She wasn't a hearer only. She was somebody that said, I hear, and I'm going to do something. I'm going to do what I need to do. Here, I wrote a couple statements down. Here's statement one. If you do nothing, you will stay the same and keep feeling guilty. Got it? What's that mean? Listen, you're going to have repeat tests where if you do nothing, you hear and you feel guilty, you feel bad about it, and I probably should do something, I probably should get involved, I probably should go there, and you're like, but I'm not going to. I look in the mirror, my hair's a mess, but I'm not going to do anything with it. And you just kind of look, you see the things, or you hear, and then you don't do anything about it. Listen, here's the reality. You will stay right where you are. Your hair does not magically get better as you go to work. Yes? In the same way spiritually. We spiritually, emotionally, mentally, we do not get better unless if we look and we say, I need to do something about what I see. So you have to work at it. You look intently, and then you work at it. And you say, I need to do something. Man, I've got this anger issue going on. Or, man, I have this lust issue going on. Or, man, I just have this bitterness thing going on. Or whatever it might be. And you say, okay, I see it. I see it clearly. And then you say, I need to do something about it. And you begin to make that change immediately. You don't wait around, and maybe next week, or maybe next time, or I don't even know what to do. Here's what you do know. You know that you have people that you can go to get some help with. To work it through. And so the person that says, I'm not going to be a doer, and they hear only, they stay right where they are, and they go through the same test repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly until they grow past it. If you do something, as James says, you'll be blessed. You'll be blessed. As I said earlier, I think that one of God's biggest frustrations with people is that they don't listen, myself included. I'm frustrated by the times that I haven't listened. I'm like, I should have been listening better, not just hearing God, not just memorizing, but actually doing. So we come to church, we feel guilty. Maybe you do now. You're like, oh, man, there's that guilt the preacher was talking about earlier, and I didn't come to feel guilty. I just came by. My mom was like, she was putting the guilt on me. Now I have my mom putting the guilt on me, and now I've got this preacher putting the guilt. Oh, man, what am I going to do? Look, take the guilt and do something with it. If God's pushing in on something in your heart that you say, I've got the mirror up, and God's showing me what I should be doing different, then do something. Don't count it as a great thing that you've just come and heard. God wants so much more for you. God wants so much more for all of us. God wants for us to have a blessed life, which simply is, I have a blessed home. I have a blessed relationship with my family, blessed church. I have a blessed neighborhood, blessed kids. I want to be blessed in everything. And how do I do that? Very simple. I hear and do, hear and do, hear and do. And if you've been practicing that, you know how awesome it is. And if you're fighting against it, you know how miserable that is. So can I encourage you? We all can be like Abigail. It only happens when you look in the mirror and then you do something with what you see. So let's do it. Let's pray. God, we thank you for the example of Abigail, this beautiful woman, this woman that had a high level of discretion, discernment, and wisdom. Lord, thank you for the way she spoke into the life of David. Thank you for how she treated her husband, who was just not a nice person either. Lord, I pray that we would be like Abigail. That we be hearers and doers in our own life. That we be hearers and doers of what you called us to do in the people's lives around us. Give us grace, Lord, give us strength. Help us, Lord, not to be filled with bitterness as Nabal was. Help us to forgive. Help us to look at you as the one who blesses. And we'll give you the praise for it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.